have a meeting. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I need to do that. I'll pretend I'll remember and then I'll forget. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 12, part 2. And if you would, please welcome our panel. We have Liz and Leanne. All right, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Our reading is going to start, our first paragraph is on page 96. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision to tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Leanne?
My name is Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Leanne.
My sobriety date is August 8th, 1999, and Simple Actions is my home group. So last week we were talking about the first, or step 12A, where we were having our first visit or conversation with an alcoholic. And here it's saying that we're making our second visit. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in August of 99, and I got a sponsor right away. I was at the end of my rope. Within about 2 or 3 weeks, I had a sponsor and started making those phone calls every day and taking the suggestions. I was done. I was completely dead on the inside and was willing to do anything. And So here, at that very first, actually my very first meeting, they gave me a big book and said, go home and read it. And so I started reading it and I could relate right away to the thinking, the feelings, all of that kind of stuff. So when I got this sponsor, she had a couple of years in the program, and she had a sponsor, and I felt like she had some experience with this. And when it says here, practical advice, so I was always taught to look up words. So I've got written in my book, practical, concern with actual doing or use of something rather than theory or ideas. So it really is about what's in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you that my experience, you know, when I came in 99, a lot of the stuff that was being done at the meetings I went to was in the 12 and 12. So my experience in the big book did not begin really until I was about eight years sober. So that's my experience. So I won't talk too much about my early sobriety as far as the step work and with the 12 and 12, because I really did begin to have a full onset of new experiences when I started working out of the big book. And I sponsor people those first 8 years. And it really, there was somewhere deep inside of me, like I felt like I was missing something and I didn't know what that was. And several years ago when I started working with this new sponsor, I was in a big book step meeting, and we met. It took us about 2 years to go through the 12 steps, but you know, we would meet every Sunday and would read and go through the book. And that's really where I began to feel that I was armed with the facts about alcoholism and myself to where I could help somebody else. And I've had a different experience working with people and sponsees since I did that. You know, so when it says here, it's about the actual doing or use of something. You know, I had a lot of theories and a lot of ideas for the first 7 or 8 years in AA. And that's not what this is about. They're talking about practical advice. And for me, that's the first 164 pages of the big book. And I've had other people, too, where it says here, do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And I've had that experience working with people. And Sammy said last week, you know, how it used to hurt her feelings, and it did me too. You know, it's like, oh, you know, what was I doing wrong? That's like my mind always goes to that, all about me. And it's okay today, you know, if somebody decides to take a different path with another sponsor. All I can offer, you know, is my experience. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks for sharing. Hi, I'm Liz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Liz. I don't know if
you can hear me. Bear with me. I've never used a mic before, so my sobriety date is October 8th, 2015. That morning, I woke up in a treatment center. I did not come right to the rooms of AA. I had some assistance from my family. They knew what my alcoholism was and was doing to me prior to me realizing or being willing to accept it. But I was introduced to the rooms of AA through that treatment center, and they strongly encouraged me to get a temporary sponsor there, and her name was Lee. And I, the first time I called her, this is my big book from treatment. You know, all of my notes are in here, and some of them are really, really wacky. Some of them are really off the wall. The things that I highlighted, the things that I thought were, that's the money, that's where I'm gonna get, you know, fixed, and everything's gonna be great. And I'm, you know, it doesn't turn out that way. But that is where I was introduced to AA, where I was introduced to the big book, where I was introduced to the benefits of a sponsor. She was very kind to me. She was impossibly kind to me. She, you know, we all went in on the buggy, the druggy buggy, all to meetings that, you know, me and everyone else in my small group at treatment all had the same sponsor. You know, this poor woman dealt with us all like she deserves to be canonized, probably. You know, because she would listen to me then, and she came and picked me up, and she took me to her home group, and where she set up for the meeting, where she set up coffee, and that's where I learned to set up chairs, and how that was part of working with others and the service aspect of Step 12 that's been explained to me by my sponsor, and all the little details that go into it, because I'm still very new at this, and I'm not, you know, I get those, am I doing it wrong? What's going on? I don't really know. But I do it to the best of my abilities that I have at the time, because I'm honest about it. I'm willing to try, and I'm available. I make myself available to other alcoholics. I couldn't read the first 164 pages by myself when I first walked in here because it was too confusing and I would fall asleep instantly. I used the tool of Joe and Charlie, Big Books Come Alive, The Big Book Comes Alive. So I listened to it. It was in 20-minute increments. I could understand it, and it made it, it was a nice addition to my sponsor, because then I would come with her, and when I met her, it wasn't like I picked her and she picked me. It was, she had what I wanted. I walked into that room and everyone was listening to her. She seemed to be, have that peace and that grace and that calmness that I had never had in my entire life. And I couldn't believe she was an alcoholic, because she seemed to have it together in my eyes, you know. And when we started talking, and she could she almost knew how I was feeling before I was feeling it, and the things that I had done and tried to get away with, and the things I had, you know, she could speak my insanity right back to me, and then gently guide me in the direction of, hey, this is okay where you're at. You know, you have 30 days sober, you're gonna feel like this. And through those small beginnings, I started reading the Big Book. We did a lot with the 12 and 12. That's my experience. That's where I started. This is a lifelong process. You know, that's where it is for me. So I'm still gaining experience. I have women that I work with who we don't really, we're starting that process of becoming friends, and they know I'm available. We get together, we read the Big Book. It's going. I don't know. It's a process for me. But I know it's something that I want to continue to do. And I can hear myself and my insanity when they talk to me, and how they don't want to. The eighth step was a big one for me. I wasn't willing to make a list. And I'm working with, it's the same thing. She's telling me the same thing. And I'm like, I understand. But no, you don't understand. I'm like, no, but I do. It's okay. But, and when she's ready, she'll be ready. And if not with me, with someone else, and that's okay. That's all I have on that section.
Awesome. I'm going to read this, and then I'm going to go try to fix that ringing in that microphone. Page 98, we're going to continue. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give that often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Yeah.
Okay. There are a lot of cautions in here. And I was one of those that clamored for this or that when I came in. My experience was that it was not, AA was not a wanted thing in my home. I was married, I'd been married 2 years, and, you know, he didn't want me to have the behaviors I was having, but he didn't want me to have to do this. And so it was very, very difficult. I look back and I know that the grace of God was there because it would have been, my normal nature would be to crumble and just to say, I can't do both. You know, and of course, the insecurities and everything I had at that time, I would have stayed, I would have picked him. But something kept me coming back to this. And so, you know, I'm armed with with the facts about that when I'm working with somebody new, you know, that says, well, I've got this to do or I've got that to do. I've done that. At the time, I wasn't working when I first started meetings and was unemployable. I wouldn't have told you that when I walked in the door, but that was the case. And so, you know, noontime, I'd call my sponsor in the morning and say, well, I'm not going to make it over there at noon. And she'd say, well, why not? Well, I've got this or that to do. And she'd say, well, why don't you do that after? You know, or why don't you do half of it now and the rest of it after? And wow, you know, that wasn't my idea. And I balked at some of that sometimes, but I still showed up. Like I did it, what she was suggesting for me to do. And, you know, so it says job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God, instead of dependence on God. And also that goes for me, my own self-sufficiency, dependence upon myself, that I'm going to figure this out. I had a really hard time with prayer. Anything she suggested, I balked at. She was beginning to try to get me to depend upon God, you know, and I really was dependent upon her. Like, I really thought she was going to do this thing for me. You know, I thought she'd meet me at meetings and she'd tell me what to do. And it really did set up a pattern. And it's been a struggle for me even today in sobriety with my sponsor now, is that I really want to be lazy and I want her to tell me what to do. Just tell me. And it caught me not too long ago. We were talking and there was she said something and I wrote it down. And when I was in this situation with my husband, I said these words and he goes, who told you to say that? He knew it wasn't from me. It sounded really good, you know, but he knew that it was not me. And so I've carried that through, you know, in my sobriety of wanting somebody else to tell me what to do, you know, like to me, that's the easier, softer way. Just let me kind of fly by and have somebody move me where I need to go. And so I really do have to be careful when I'm working with someone, not to tell them what to do. You know, I can offer suggestions, but I don't want to meddle in the marriage. I don't want to meddle in physical things, you know, like health or anything like that. Like, and so that's, for me, I have to really be careful with the way that I'm going to help somebody. This is about a spiritual experience, and how to be helpful. I have to stop. I have to pause. I have to say, God, what is it here that you? How do you want me to help this person? I know it's been a couple of years, and I was meeting somebody that was kind of new to the program, and she was going to a meeting, and I wasn't going to be there. And it was like 7:15, the meeting started at 8, and I got this thing on me like, you need to go and you need to be there. And I don't know what that, I know what that was, where that was coming from, but it was like, I mean, physically. And I showed up, the meeting was canceled because nobody was there with the key to the church. And I was able to meet her, and we walked across the street to Starbucks and had a conversation similar to that, what we were just talking about, that second visit with with another alcoholic. And, you know, so I really do have to quiet myself to be open to what it is that God wants me to do, be doing here when I'm working with somebody else. It's not about just picking up that phone and listening to what they're saying and mouthing something back. Like, I've got to be involved with it. And it isn't a service that I'm offering here. This is a program that's a spiritual experience that I want the newcomer or the person that I'm working with that's sitting next to me or reading the book, that I want them to have. That's all that I can give them. I'm not here to solve the marital problems. I mean, that's what I was looking for when I got here. You know, how to live one day at a time without a drink. Thanks.
Thanks, Amy.
This is, I'm trying to gather my thoughts here. The spiritual aspect, prayer was introduced to me very early for this, on page 85, whatever it is, on awakening. That helped me plan my day. I also didn't have anything going on. My schedule was free for me to make 7 meetings a day. I didn't know anyone else in Virginia, so that's where I went. You know, I also came in wanting to fix a marriage, or I came in, I was the victim of all of these circumstances, when in fact all of my behaviors and actions had led up to that. Again, I couldn't be honest about that in the beginning. I couldn't be honest about why I was there, how I got there, why I should continue to be here, because my entire life, my behavior, my actions, I knew what the rules were. I just didn't think they applied to me. I was like above it or around it or under it. Like, I just didn't. So this whole, my sponsor explaining to me how honesty was a spiritual principle was an interesting conversation, because she had to explain to me, you know, the whole truth. You know, what are your motives behind that? Why, you know, and my favorite thing, she'd ask me something, well, is that true? And I'm like, well, and she could tell by the inflection of my voice that it wasn't true. So this is, you know, she didn't hand it to me. She never coddled me or anything like that. She told me, this is what it is. You're going to have to pray about it and wait and see. It's taught me a lot of patience. Because that, too, I was reliant upon my husband. I was reliant upon my parents. I was reliant upon anyone and anything, and it's okay that I'm glad I had to do it that way, because I was able to really see what God dependence felt like when things did not go my way, and I just hung on and waited and prayed and didn't pick up a drink. Things seem to fall into place. And I still can't even believe why. I still, honestly, sitting here talking to y'all, this is not where I thought I was going to be, you know, October 7th of 2015. Did I think I would be speaking to you all here on July 3rd of 2017? It's very strange for me. This is not, you know, in part one where they talk about, you know, when all else fails, work with another alcoholic. When all other activities fails, I really, really wanted to know what those other activities were, because I didn't. I really. This is a struggle for me. I don't. This isn't in my nature of like wanting to put myself out there to be seen and to be heard in this manner. Like, I was fine with the center of attention and being, you know, I don't know. I'm not okay with it in sobriety, but it's all right because I found that when I step out of my comfort zone, this is where I grow. This is difficult, but it's, I have to do it this way because my sponsor could tell me things a million times and I could read this book a million times, but unless I experience it for my own self, I do not believe you. I don't even believe the book sometimes. I'm like, really? But experience of just accepting people for where they are and where they're at has been a big influence on me, and the other alcoholics that were around me when I first came in have all, I mean, yes, I have one sponsor, but really I've learned something from every single person, drunk or sober, in an AA meeting. You know, I want what they have. I don't know what's going on with this person, but I know it'll work out, and I just have to pay attention and to keep my eyes on God, because that I found God in the third step. I found it in a very profound way. I, you know, that's what carried me through the rest of the steps. I had that moment where I cried out for help and God showed up. And I was like, well, all right then. This is what we're doing now. You know, and I've kind of flown by the seat of my pants the rest of the time. But it's that dependence is like no other. That gives me the independence to go anywhere, do anything, to be around anyone, and to be secure in knowing in myself that I am okay. And that's what God dependence means to me. Thank you.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
So I shared that I had domestic problems. and I was one that was never vocal, really, in my marriage. You know, I would hold everything in and then drink to kind of quiet the disturbance that was going on. I saw that happen a lot in my mother and father, and that's what I brought to my marriage. And there wasn't much communication. I felt like it was, you know, his way or the highway. And what I've learned through the program is that really wasn't necessarily true. I didn't like to argue. I would fault find, but I would hold it inside. And it says that these things should be avoided by the plague. That means, like, not to think about it. So I had to really practice picking up the phone and calling my sponsor about what I was telling myself or what I was thinking. And it says that it's a difficult thing to do, and it was. I remember her sponsor had told her, and she passed along to me this thing about duct tape. And so I went and got out of the garage, the big thing of gray duct tape, and I sat it next to my bathroom on the counter there. And when I wanted to say something, I'd walk in there and look at it. I mean, that sounds really ridiculous, but the fact was I needed to keep my mouth shut, because once I, That obsession to drink was removed from me. I said this yesterday in a meeting. I was never a violent drunk, but I became a violent dry alcoholic. I threw a shoe down a hall, and it was like, I'm losing it. Like, I'm going crazy without a drink. And or I'd come home, and all my clothes would be out of the closet on the floor, you know, get out. I mean, it was really nasty. He was not happy with what I was doing. But you got to understand, too, it was like a business deal when we got married. That's what I brought to the table. Like, you do this for me, I'll do this for you. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Like, it was this business arrangement. And so when everything went to where I negated on that, he was really upset. and that's something that we've had to work through, and we still work through. I mean, last week was 20 years of marriage we celebrated, and I can tell you that it is still something that I have to work on with him, being for me to be able to communicate and not argue, not fault find, but to step away from it and then to be able to come back and have a conversation. And it says that this must be done if any results are to be expected. And if persisted in a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. Well, I didn't have that experience. For the first 2.5 years, I drug him to marriage counseling. And, you know, she did the best she could, the marriage counselor with us. And she was 47, and I went in one day, and she said, I'm retiring, and my mouth about dropped. I thought, oh my God, this is like my ally. Like, this is the only person besides my sponsor, you know, and she's not talking to my husband, but the marriage counselor is, that can back me up, you know. And all she said to me was, here's a card of another therapist. You can start having sessions with him, but if you'll go to AA and do what is suggested, you will be okay. Not the marriage will be okay, but that I will be okay. And there was a shift in our relationship after that, because I didn't continue marriage counseling. And I began to be willing, and that was at 2.5 years, to begin to be willing really to look at my inventory, what I was doing, what I was getting spun up about, what I was thinking, what I was manipulating, you know, all of that kind of stuff. I manipulated the money, I manipulated what I wanted to do, you know, finding ways to coerce him to whatever vacation or whatever it was, you know, that I wanted. And, you know, it really has been little by little that he's been able to open up to me, I've been able to open up to him through a process of direct amends and living amends. And I still have to practice this argument and fault finding. It's, you know, this is something that I have to surrender my nature when I want to say something. I've been on this trajectory lately with us and our relationship, and his stepdaughter that lives with us, and this argument and fault finding, like, I just go at it like with claws on, you know. And and it is not helpful, it is not love, it is not tolerance, it is not being a supportive wife. Because I am demanding for him to do something different. And so, you know, I really have to take a step back, you know, and say, you know, ask some really tough questions to myself through some inventories. And that's, I'm in the process of that right now. So this isn't once and done, and I come in and I'm happy, joyous, and free, and life goes on, and I'm sober, and he's happy I'm sober, and we go down the happy trail. Like, this is a work in progress for me. It's a walk that I have to continue one day at a time.
Thank you. Absolutely, domestic problems. My marriage wasn't saved because I got sober. It was done. It did, you know, I went through, just recently finalized, you know, sober. I had to go through all those motions, all those emotions, sober. I had nothing to kill them. But it's okay, because it just made me stronger, because it made me rely on God and to see where I was at fault in that marriage, where I was at fault in the relationships with, now has, I haven't had my ex admit any of his faults to me or anything like that, and that's okay, he doesn't have to. I have to do my inventory daily and see where my fault was in that entire thing, and that, I liked what Joe and Charlie said too on, it says the only relationship that's discussed in this book is the one with God, you know, and myself. I need to know my motives, my weaknesses, why I think and behave the way that I do, and it literally has nothing to do with him. He did his own thing, but I can tell you today, we are friends. He knows how far I've come. He is supportive of the fact that I am sober. He's like, I can't even believe you did it. Because, you know, I married my drinking buddy. You know, that's what we did. That was our common interest. I drank with people who drank like me. So all of my friends also, our only common interest was drinking. I didn't go back home to Rhode Island after treatment. I stayed here because there wasn't anything for me to go back to. I could not stay sober if I had gone back. So I stayed here. My home group members became my family. Even when my sister, I was living with my sister after treatment and that wasn't working. And she asked me to leave and I'm like, okay. So now I gotta find a place that my home group members were there the entire time. And I would just go there. There was still three meetings a week there at the Oceanfront Brunch Bunch down at 1900 Baltic Avenue. And I would go sit in the meeting, cry. After the meeting, I would check out apartments, find whatever I needed to do to be self-sufficient, to be fully self-supporting and to have the basics. And it was interesting because it was the first time I had ever tried to do that by myself. And they were very kind and patient and tolerant and loving to me. It's interesting because my family doesn't understand me as an alcoholic. I'm the only one. My parents are lovely people. They do not understand why they have an alcoholic daughter. And they didn't do anything wrong. I don't even know if they have any defects to admit them. You know, they're not saints. You know, they're my parents. But they're really good people. I still talk to my dad almost every morning, and he says a serenity prayer with me because he knows where I was and how that helps me. So they have adopted some of the spiritual practice, but they already had it. They already had a faith. They had that already. Somewhere I didn't get it or didn't want to get it and would rather drink. So that's, I don't know how that happened. But it's so true. I've seen things work out for people and relationships restored. I still always get a little ting of like, you know, like, oh, I'm still married. You know, you hear old timers or people who have been around forever, they're like, and my marriage was saved. And I still get it like, that didn't happen for me. That's okay. That's not my story. But it's a good, and that's why I actually had a woman. I had to tell her, I can't help you anymore. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not a financial planner. Don't ask me for that advice either. You know, there's so many things that I don't have yet that I'm working on, but I have enough sense to be like, someone else can help you if you are willing to ask for help and follow the directions that they give you, you know, and use their experience. I said, it may not be me in AA, but it's probably someone else in AA. And if you just keep coming back, you will find that person that can help you better than I can. And I think a lot of that is remembering that, who is my God? Who I can't do this. I give the credit where credit is due, and God has brought me thus far, and I believe that God could bring anyone this far if they're willing to put in the work.
So. Awesome. We're going to continue on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
That's a big promise there. And that's been my experience. When it says spiritual progress, that's something that I've struggled with. I shared earlier about wanting that easier, softer way. And for me, that nightly inventory and looking at what stirred me up through the day. Have I been resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid, any of those things? And that's been a real struggle for me to be able to be honest and look at that. There are days that I just don't want to do that. I'm tired, or I want to brush things under the rug, or not today. And sometimes that can come from the direction of a sponsor. That's something that I, she may ask me a specific question. Well, I'll get to that tomorrow, but I've opened the door with a sponsor to say, I need eyes on my life, my perception and the way that I look at things is very distorted most of the time, if it has something to do with me and that involves any of those ego, pride, self-esteem, sexual relationships, friendships, all that kind of stuff. Anytime that stuff's threatened and not wanting to look at that. But I know that I am today where I am because somehow I've been willing, 1 inch at a time, 1 hour at a time, to be able to keep looking at that. And I've never left AA. I guess it's like I'm scared to death. I still have that fear in me of if I were ever to walk away. Doesn't mean that I'll never think about it, or maybe I can go to, this many meetings a week instead of this amount, or, whatever. Or I can get mad at my sponsor, and think, well, maybe I need to get a different sponsor. All those things still enter my mind. It's not a... my nature is still there. It's tamped down quite a bit through the process of the steps and being willing to look at this stuff. But I have to say that the willingness to sponsor other women and to take them through the book, that has been probably the biggest growth of me following the dictates of a higher power. Because I remember that when I first started sponsoring somebody and going through the book, I thought, how in the world am I going to be able to do this? Me, it's all me. How am I going to do this? And that's not what this is about. I really I have to depend on my sponsor. I remember that first time I would talk to her about each chapter that I was getting ready to read with somebody and, kind of go through like the highlights of it, like Bill's story, let's pick out, all the steps, see if they can find the steps in Bill's story, whatever, those kinds of things. And, but then other times to where I really have to be quiet, or if I've met with that person, to take a step back and say, God, help me to hear what she was saying to me today. It's not meeting for an hour, closing the book, and saying, okay, good, I don't have to do that till next week, because I've done that before. You know, so this is very powerful for me, even today in my life. It wasn't, you know, just when I started working with a sponsor, but it is for when I'm working with others, and where I'm still working with my sponsor, you know, to be honest, to tell her what's really going on, because a lot of times, you know, it's, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to get honest to say, this is what I've been thinking. That's too crazy after all this time, you know, that I'm going to be judged. I'm not going to be judged, but my head keeps telling me that. And I've been given experiences over and over again of, you know, God's hand being there, whether it's in my family life, whether it's been in my AA life, whether it's been in my work life, you know, going back to work after getting sober, and I work at a place that I never thought I could work at. I always thought maybe I'd like to, but I thought I'm not that smart. And I'm not that smart. But God gave me what I needed when I showed up to work, you know. I hated computers. When I got sober, I had a computer that I'd bought. That was in 98. It sat in my kitchen for a year, and I never hooked it up. You know, for $500, I bought this computer and never hooked it up. And then what's happened, you know, today is that's when I work, I sit in front of a computer all day long. Like, how does that happen, you know? So I had to be willing to listen to new ideas that weren't my own, to take the risk of trying something different, believing that God's, and claiming God's grace, I think, claiming it, that I know that he's going to give me what I need. You know, when work sent me to California to get trained for this computer program, to have to come back and to train the company, like, there were three of us, and I'm like, I can't do that, you know? But I talked to my sponsor, and she's like, just go out there and do the training. We had a great time. Came back, and we're all using this computer program, you know, and at work, and never could balance a checkbook, and how is it that I'm in the accounting department and I pay the bills for this $10 million company? Like, it's insane stuff, you know. So it is a walk day by day with a sponsor, sponsee, or people in your home group, or friends that you meet in meetings, you know, that really keep me alive, and to see the experience in other people that this stuff works. Thanks.
Thank you. This is so funny. I still feel like I'm not getting it. I'm not doing it right. What am I supposed to say? But it's walking day by day on a path of spiritual progress. It's funny because it's not just people in AA. It's people that I encounter on a daily basis that, for whatever reason, my higher power seems to think that I need to be here at this moment, and whoever it is. So there's I'm not having the right words right now. Where I was at this time last year was helping a home group member who was dying of cancer. So I didn't have anything to do, you know, and to keep me out of trouble, he needed some help, you know, taking him grocery shopping and maybe making a meal or two and just kind of keeping him company. And he was a home group member. He made coffee. He taught me how to make coffee the right way. 1.5 scoops. Not one, not two. And God gave me the grace to be able to even sit in the same room with him, because we had a lot of differences. But we were the same, where we didn't, working with others was not our strong suit when we came in to AA. I mean, I couldn't even say hello to you people. I could, you know, my sponsor would say, hey, just to get you comfortable around people, greet, you know, someone comes in, say hello, sit, tell them where the ladies' room is or the men's room is or where the coffee is and stuff like that. And I'm like, I don't want to. I can't. I mean, there were some people, she's like, will it kill you to say hello to them? It might. You know, I had a lot of anger when I first came in. Angry, angry bird. I was just angry at everybody, everything, and angry at the world. And, you know, God used that, my inability to talk to other people and this man's inability to talk to other people, and we became buddies. And, you know, he did not like the way I drove. He did not like the shepherd's pie that I made him because it didn't have gravy. But we were buddies, and he talked to me about the book and sticking with the program. He had 5 years sober when he passed. And that experience, I've never been a caretaker to that capacity. I had never seen someone go through that. Not, you know, my parents are healthy. Then after that, subsequently, my grandfather passed, my grandmother passed. You know, it didn't give me, I didn't have an excuse the next day to say, oh, I'm so upset, I'm so sad, I'm gonna go drink. It just didn't even occur to me. I was so blessed to be able to be there when he passed. And I was like, man, because he told me, he's like, I have 3 months, I'm not gonna drink, are you? And I'm like, no. You know, and he very much, you know, it's funny because I'm just amazed at what God did with me through that situation and gave me the ability to show up to be of service to another human being who the only thing we had in common was that we were alcoholics. And he was kind to me when I first came in, when I was so emotionally upset, and, you know, I was just, and he's like, well, come in and make coffee. You know, there was no coddling about it. He wasn't like, there, it'll be okay. He's like, you know, that's what it was. And I've had those experiences, and I'm looking forward to more of those moments where you're like, man, God brought this person into my life to teach me something. And I've already learned from the women from the couple of women who my ego, I was trying to sponsor, but it didn't go the right way because I didn't have anything to give them. They were looking for something else that I don't have to give. You know, this is all I have is in this book, the directions in here, what my sponsor's given me. Really anything outside of that, you don't want to ask my advice about. But it's been a gift, and I look forward to continuing it. Thank you.
Thank you. We are kind of about out of time. Maybe there's another minute. I'll do these last two paragraphs, and if you guys want to add a little something, otherwise we'll pass the baskets. So we're going to continue on page 102. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they're not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While we were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job is to be in a place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
Yeah, so I still don't make a habit of going into bars. And I really did have to be careful in early sobriety, where I would physically place myself. But I had other ideas, because I remember coming in August, and that Christmas, there was a Christmas function in my neighborhood, and I was hell-bent on going. And my sponsor said, you know, maybe that's not a good idea. You really don't have to go. I think she was seeing if I was going to surrender my nature enough to stay home, and I didn't. And after it was over, I thought, wow, I was on some shaky ground there, you know. Didn't take her suggestion. I was still dealing with untreated alcoholism. All I could think about when I was there was everybody that was drinking. So, you know, if I'm self-obsessed, all I can think about is me, not what I can bring to it. I really don't have any business being there. When it says, you know, an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind, and that, for me, that is untreated alcoholism. There is no escaping that. I don't know if David wrote, did you read that about the ice cap? All of a sudden, you skipped it. Okay. But there is no escaping it. You know, I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. You know, there is no defense against that first drink. It is between me and my God. And do you have to say that, you know, talking with the sponsor at the other end of the phone, and what business do I have being there? You know, early on, I was sober probably 2 months, and my brother got married, and I was in the wedding, and I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to do that? You know, and I was given the opportunity to participate in the wedding, to attend part of the reception, had my own car so that I could leave when it got a little wild. And it was fine. And nobody missed me. You know, and so, but I was, you know, that was in October, and then give me a couple months in AA, and by December, I'm like, I am going to that Christmas party, you know, where 2 or 3 months earlier, I was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to be in my brother's wedding, you know? So that cocksuredness came back, that I've got this thing under control, you know, and you know, see that I really don't. And just real quick, that last thing when it said all of our problems, after all our problems were of our own making, bottles were only a symptom. And you know, for me, once I came into AA and that obsession to drink was lifted, I told you earlier, my life got really crazy really fast and was coming out of my skin. So that tells me that alcohol wasn't my problem. There were a lot of other things. And for me, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that can help me deal with that, so one day at a time I don't have to take a drink. Thanks.
I'm good.
Okay. All right, we're gonna pass the seven tradition basket that states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? From anyone? All righty then. Oh, yep. No. Nope.
Hi,
Ebony.
Hey, Ebony. Tomorrow, the 4th of July, the Oceanfront Brunch Fund at 1900 Baltic Avenue will be having food, fun, and fellowship following our 12:30 meeting. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Anybody else?
You will see on this table over here these green flyers, and I would invite everyone to take all of the green flyers that are in here out of here, because they're not going to do anybody any good this week, because next Monday night, right in this room, we're going to have a supper and a speaker. A little different than our normal meeting. We've finished up the 12 steps, now we're going to have a little party. So it's a potluck at 6 o'clock. Bring a dish if you wish, please, at 6 o'clock. And then at the regular meeting time, which is 7, Mike T. from Falls Church, Virginia, is going to come down and tell his story to all of us. So we'll have a little fellowship, have a little story. Please help us get the word out. It's an open meeting. All are welcome. We'll look forward to having you here next week. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? If we could just get your first name, we'd like to welcome you. Anybody? There's literature available right there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. If you can fold it, it's free. If you'd like to purchase a book, we can help you with that. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or you would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close this meeting. So please feel free to come up and chat, okay? And reminders, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And before we close, could we thank the panel one more time, please? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is usually held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial, but I have a sneaking suspicion they might be closed tonight, but we'll try. And maybe go to A.W. Shucks if they're not open. All right, I'm just winging it now. Could I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please?
Grant,
hey, Grant.
A book that tends to be suggested only, you realize and know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in the morning meditation what you can do each day for the man you are still seeing. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. Seek to it that your relationship with right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.
After we close with the Lord's Prayer, please feel free to come thank our speakers.
Be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.